The following is brought to you by the Leave It in the Ring Podcast Network. All boxing, no filter.
Greetings and welcome to the Boxing Esquire Podcast. Welcome to another edition of the Boxing Esquire Podcast, presented by The Ring and RingTV.com and distributed by the Leave It in the Ring Network. I'm very honored to have as my guest on this episode two great Irish sports writers, Kieran Cunningham of the Irish Daily Star and Ewan McKenna of the Irish Independent. We discussed the recent revelation that major promoters in boxing are using Daniel Kinahan, an alleged kingpin of an international drug and money laundering cartel, as their agent for doing business in the Middle East. We go into the background of the Kinahan cartel and the formation of the MGM Gym in Marbella, Spain, and how that would launch the boxing management and promotional company now known as MTK. We spoke about the lines, how the lines between the criminal enterprise and the boxing enterprise crossed and reached their flashpoint with a shooting at the Regency Hotel in Dublin in 2016. We then talk about how MTK and Kinahan have persevered despite the bloodshed and body count of the Kinahan-Hutch feud, and how they've grown into a massive presence in the sport of boxing and the repercussions of that on both the Irish and global boxing stages. A really lively and informative conversation that I really think you'll enjoy. It is my honor and privilege to have as my guest on this episode two distinguished international sports writers, Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer at the Irish Daily Star in Dublin, Ireland, and Ewan McKenna, host of the Black Eye podcast and columnist for the Irish Independent News. Kieran, Ewan, welcome to the Boxing Esquire podcast.
Thanks, Kurt. Good to be on.
Great to brief you out of Kurt. Lovely to talk to you.
Great. So first question, just want to know how the two of you are coping with the global pandemic. I guess I'll start with you, Ewan. How are things?
Hey, good. I'm actually in Portugal at the minute. It's pretty good. Things are slowly reopening. But as someone who never particularly liked the company of people, I don't mind the lockdown.
Social distancing, not a problem for you, Ewan.
I've been doing it for years, Kurt.
Kurt, I know Ewan. I can confirm he's not joking either. So. he really doesn't like people. So. Yeah. But it's been fine here as well. We've been lucky, Kurt. We've actually, in Ireland, we've got great weather the last few weeks. It's been a bit like Portugal, and that's made it a bit easier to cope with. Like, even though you're limited in where you can go 5K now in terms of exercise. It was 2 kilometers up till a couple of weeks ago, but like, even around, you know, if you go into your back garden or go for, you know, short walks or something, it's just been a lot more pleasant. Like, I work from home anyway, as Ewan would have for a long time, and so it isn't a huge amount of difference. You have to do a bit of homeschooling, which is can be a bit challenging, but right. Other than that, it's not too bad.
Okay, excellent. Well, you know, I have both of you on the program today to talk about, you know, a huge story, kind of rocked the boxing world, certainly over here. And you guys have been reporting on this for many years, as it turns out. But the fact that, you know, top rank promoter Bob Arum openly admitted he's using Daniel Kinahan as his agent in United Arab Emirates to negotiate a potential deal for a proposed heavyweight unification fight between WBC and lineal champion Tyson Fury, who's managed by the organization Kinahan founded, MTK, and unified WBA, WBO, and IBF champ Anthony Joshua. Let's start with Kieran. Just how surprised were you to hear that Bob Arum come out and openly admit he was in business with Kinahan to try and negotiate possibly the biggest fight in the sport of boxing right now?
That's a good question. In one way, I was very surprised, because Bob Arum is such a prominent figure in the world of boxing for over 50 years. And given Daniel Kinahan, to be kind, he has a checkered reputation, and that's been very kind. So for him to talk so openly about what a great guy he was and calling him Captain Dan and how he's the guy that makes things happen in the Middle East, it was a bit of a surprise from that point of view. But at the same time, over the last 3 months, it's been very interesting. It seems like there's been a concerted campaign to rehabilitate Daniel Kinahan, right, and to reinvent himself as a boxing promoter, because he was obviously one of the founders of MTK as it was when it was MGM. It was previously called MGM, and they had to change because of, I think, a legal action from Las Vegas, MGM in Las Vegas. But The MTK have been very keen to distance themselves from Daniel Kinnear in the last few years. They said there's been a buyout, that he's nothing to do with them. But now they've announced that he's an advisor. Bob Arum said he's advising him and Top Rank, and that he helps out with, he negotiates things with Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn. And now he's also been announced, it was announced 2 weeks ago, he's an advisor for a group called BHK Sport in Bahrain, which are backed by the Bahraini royal family, which have huge money behind them. Right. And, you know, there was a rap song released on YouTube 3 months ago that had all these conspiracy theories about Daniel Kinnear, how he was an innocent man, and the media and the Irish government and the Irish police force have been trying to set him up. Then a supposed documentary was released a couple of weeks ago putting forward the same conspiracy theory. And it's all, there's been this drip feed over the last few months that is trying to rehabilitate Daniel Kinnear's reputation. Because Daniel Kinnear, 2 years ago in a high court in Dublin, he was identified by the Criminal Assets Bureau as controlling and managing the Kinnear Organized Crime Group. And this is an organization that smuggles drugs and guns into Ireland, the UK, mainland Europe. It is involved in money laundering all over the place. It is a major drugs cartel. It's involved in a feud in Ireland that's killed 18 people. And right. 16 of the murders have been by the Kinnear cartel. So for him to be suddenly talked up by so many people in boxing, when in court so much has been said about him, it's really surprising. He has no criminal convictions himself. Donald Kinnear, just to fill you in on his background, is a son of Christy Kinnear. He was known as the Dapper Don. He has convictions for drugs and money laundering in three different countries. And he was a major gangland figure in Ireland. And eventually, he's in exile in Spain. The last we heard, he was in Hong Kong, I think. He's moved around because of various police forces want to talk to him about various things.
Right.
So that's his background. You know, that's a big, because there's this thing that's been spun by MTK that he's been treated very unfairly, that there's a rags to riches story, that this guy from Dublin's inner city, has risen to the top in boxing. But right. You look at his family, like they're not, you know, they weren't street traders. If they were trading in something, it was, it wasn't fruit and vegetables. There's a lot of questions here, Kurt. A couple of them, the big question to me it really highlights is, and I think you're interested in this, and your work as an attorney and in boxing management, is who runs boxing? Right. Like if this happened in soccer, you know, you would go to FIFA with a list of questions about Daniel Kinnear. How is this guy involved? How is he allowed to be involved? Are you concerned about these various questions have been brought up about him? If he was in track and field, you go to the IAAF. But who runs boxing? Right. Which governing body do you go to? If you have a problem with Daniel Kinnear, who do you actually go to?
Right. Yeah, I definitely. You've given me a lot to unpack there. In fact, I think I've got about 8 pages of notes on this whole thing. There's so much here. Let's kind of just start at the top. I mean, with you mentioned Christy Kinnahan and kind of the origins of how we got here. Christy Kinnahan is Daniel's father. You know, he's considered kingpin of what's now estimated, billion-dollar, illegal drug empire. And like you said, I mean, he was arrested. He's done jail time for possession of heroin, of stolen traveler's checks. I know there was a big court case about fixing races in England, I think, where some well-known jockeys were involved. I think Daniel was named in testimony in that case. There was also Operation Shovel, in which was an international investigation where he was arrested. Daniel was arrested, but both were let go. And I know Christy did more time in Belgium for money laundering. So and it's reported he's a suspect in numerous murder cases. So clearly Christy Kinnahan, powerful career criminal with his hands in a lot of different scams, who's built quite an empire over the years. Talk about the scope of the reach in Europe of the Kinnahan organization.
Well, they're kind of seen as the number one cocaine traffickers throughout Europe. They bring a lot of stuff in from South America, but they've interests in Brazil, Sierra Leone, China, the Middle East, Ireland, England, Spain. It's quite phenomenal. And you mentioned the kind of billion euro plus worth of their assets. I mean, and it's not just the cocaine. That their other great skill is seen as laundering money, to the point that other gangs come to them and use them to launder money. Daniel would have taken over, I believe, from his father around 2015, when this latest feud, as Kieran mentioned, killed about 18 people, 16 from the Kinahan side. And I mean, even the first murder in that was in 2015, and Spanish police gave evidence around that. And they said that Daniel Kinahan himself had ordered that murder. So, I mean, for quite a number of years, he's been a tier one target in Ireland, a tier one target in the UK, a tier one target in Spain. So, I mean, he's at the very zenith of wanted criminals. And to the point, I mean, it's whether he dragged his world towards boxing or he dragged boxing towards his world is open to interpretation. But, I mean, with his influence in MTK has seen a number of unsavory incidents. I mean, I think it was November 2015, there was an attempt on his life at a show or a weigh-in, I think, at the Red Cow in Dublin. He survived that. A few months later, there was another attempt on his life where someone was killed at another weigh-in in Dublin. Back in 2014, Jamie Moore was shot by mistake instead of Daniel Kinahan when they were in Marbella in Spain. So, I mean, there's always been the link, and everyone's known. I mean, I guess the problem, you couldn't say it because he'd be sued up recently. Everyone knew he was the head of the cartel, and only this week in Ireland actually did it come out and someone was charged and named for the first time in court as a member of the Kinahan cartel. Sandra Vaughan, who runs MTK, and she says she runs MTK, she's CEO. She has long since said he had nothing to do with it, but we had a long list of boxers come out and kind of the mask slipped several times. There was Stephen Simmons said all chats must go through Kinahan, Irish super featherweight Declan Geraghty. He described him as a great manager. Jack Catterall said he's still advised by Kinahan. So there was this, the curtain was pulled back a few times and we knew what was going on. And the big question was, where was the money for MTK coming from? Because it has kind of taken over up to last year, kind of took over the European boxing scene as the Kinahans had the European cocaine scene. So, I mean, I guess it's quite something. I mean, it's almost fitting in the kind of the money over morality times we live in at the moment, Kurt. Because we saw the Joshua Ruiz fight in Saudi Arabia, a kingdom with a war criminal over it. Now we have the UAE involved in this. Another, again, the UN have said they're involved in war crimes. We have a guy who's a head of a cartel that is the leading cocaine smugglers in the world who said to have put out a hit on 16 people. And this is what's coming together at the top of boxing to make their big fights. Now, I know boxing has a long history and a kind of a shady past, but none of that makes this okay in this era. I mean, it is quite shocking to have a legitimate sport, have these figures be the Saudi Empire, the UAE regime, Daniel Kinahan. It's quite unseemly and it's very, very troubling.
Absolutely. Yeah, Kurt, there's another point that I just add what you and saying there. It's the fact where he's based as well, that he's based in Dubai. He has this Middle Eastern base. And like Ewan has written about this as well, you know, the phenomenon of sports washing. And a large part of that is based now in the Middle East, where you see like major golf events going to Saudi Arabia, Formula One Grand Prix. Qatar had the World Athletics Championships last year. We'll have the World Cup in soccer, even though it couldn't be less suited to hosting a major soccer tournament. And that's why I think there's a really good chance that Joshua Fury will take place in Saudi Arabia. And it's one event that could actually take place amid the COVID-19 restrictions, because they don't care if there's nobody at the fight. They don't care if it's behind closed doors. It's about burnishing their image on the international stage. And Daniel Kinahan has an eye for the main chance, and he's got in the ear of people who can make this happen. People in the Middle East who want it there, and the promoters who are just interested in the money and the bottom line, and they know there's a lot of money in Saudi, and they don't care about the human rights concerns that are very, very legitimate when you look out there. As an indication, too, of the global reach of the Kinahan cartel, Daniel Kinahan was actually mentioned in WikiLeaks in US diplomatic cable sent from Freetown in Sierra Leone. You know, he had links to somebody involved in the narcotics trade in Sierra Leone in Africa. So the tentacles go all over the world. Like, this isn't like Ireland is a tiny dot on the map on the edge of Europe. Like, an Irish story generally doesn't resonate globally. But the fact that the Kinahan cartel has such a global reach, and that now Daniel Kinahan is placing himself at the center of a global sport, has become a very significant story.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the origins of MTK. I guess 2012, it had its origins in a gym in Marbella, Spain, founded by former middleweight world title challenger Matthew Macklin and Kinahan. I mean, originally the gym was called MGM, as you had stated earlier, Karen. Macklin's gym, Marbella, I guess it was called. So tell me what you know about the starting of the gym and how it came about.
Well, it started like Matthew Macklin would have been a popular figure in Irish and UK boxing. And I think it's not to the media's credit by any means that the Daniel Kinahan connection was more or less overlooked for a couple of years, even though crime correspondents have been writing about the Kinahan family and about allegations being made against Daniel Kinahan, that I think the sports media was quite slow to pick up on it. And it still is very slow to pick up on it. Like, the running on this story has definitely been made in the news pages by crime specialists. A lot of sports writers don't want to know. A lot of people in the boxing beat don't want to know. And I was talking to one boxing writer in the UK who told me he would actually be interested in writing about the story, and his newspaper told him not to. They said, no, we're staying away from this. I just want you to write about Tyson Fury or whatever. I don't want to get it. We don't want to get involved in this. A part of that could be a fear factor now, because there's also a fear of libel, because a lot of newspapers are such a precarious state that a heavy libel bill could possibly close them down or lead to job losses. And the other is fear of a serious criminal organization, you know, that have killed a lot of people. So some people just don't want to get involved in that and stay out of it. And I can understand that. But at the same time, I think you have a responsibility as a journalist to dig into the story, because it is so big. And no, MTK's rise, they signed up a lot of boxers, but the emphasis was more on quantity than quality. And then eventually, over the years, they started to get better quality boxers. Like, they got Carl Frampton, and they got Tyson Fury now, who's the golden cow, because he is one heavyweight that I think could resonate in the US. He has that kind of personality, charisma, that could take off, which would be an unusual for a British heavyweight in America, as you know. But I think he has got that chance now, and I think they see that. But he left in 2017. He left MTK. According to MTK, there was a buyout. In February 2018, MTK put in place a ban on the Republic of Ireland media, which was incredible, that they would not speak, or wouldn't let their boxers speak to Republic of Ireland media, but still speak to Northern Ireland media, but not Republic of Ireland media. And that was down to coverage of the Daniel Kinahan link. Now, and I presume you know about the Streisand effect, Kurt. Have you heard of the Streisand effect?
I haven't. No, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I tried to summarize it very quickly. It's connected to a story around Barbara Streisand, and I can't remember the exact story, but it's a story she tried to suppress back in the 1970s, I think. And because of the attempt at suppression, more people got interested in it. So it backfired. So I have to be honest, I got far more interested in the MTK story when the ban was put in place, because that encouraged me to look into it more and said, what the hell is this about? And should we be looking into this a bit more? Now, the ban was lifted a year later, but a lot of journalists have stayed away from them. Some are still engaging with their boxers. But I think you are getting now, there's definitely been a momentum since Bob Arum's comments. You know, there's far more stuff in the media over here. I don't know, I saw a blog in the US. I'm not sure, there hasn't been that much in the UK, which is disappointing. But I think there's more pressure going to come on MTK. There's more pressure going to come on people like Bob Arum and organizations that have created links to Daniel Kinahan. I think the pressure has to...
If I add in, Kieran, I mean, just because the one who put the ban was, and the face of MTK, I suppose, is this woman, Sandra Vaughan, who I mentioned. And the links are so many. Like, she married a guy, or she met her partner, a guy called Kevin Kelly, and they split in 2005. And by 2012, he was rescued by the Spanish police, tied right. to a bed, beaten, tortured by what they said was the Irish mafia. Then all of a sudden, she ends up with 10 million and she buys the fake bake tanning and beauty business that the likes of Madonna endorsed. And that's raided by the Scottish Crime and Drug Enforcement Agency by 2010. By 2013, that's liquidated and she meets a guy called Danny Vaughan, who was a trainer. So, I mean, the links are, it's so obvious. I mean, and these are not nice people. And as Kieran mentions, I mean, whether it's a fear, I mean, there is a duty to do this, but they are bullies. And whether, I mean, there's the fear of killers in the background, to be fair. But even above that, there's just a constant bullying of this kind of fake accounts online. And they just constantly go after anyone who mentions this. And they try and shut them up in the most horrible way possible.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting. I've had a little bit of that myself just because I interviewed Bob Yalen, and I don't know what affiliation this person, the whistleblower, was from, but he was constantly badgering me to get Yalen back on and answer certain questions and so on. And yeah. Actually, you and one of the – I read it, you know, I actually hadn't, you know, I kind of heard, you know, I heard about the weigh-in, of course, but I hadn't really dug into it much. And when I was doing research for the Yalen interview, you know, I you know, found a few of your articles, and I was just like, whoa, there's something here. And, you know, the biggest question, obviously, and you'd posed it, I think, in a couple of your articles, was just like, you know, where did the money come from, you know, to get the gym off the ground, to get the organization off the ground? You know, so is there any question as to where at least in your mind, you know, as to where the money came from to start MGM and MTK?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can maybe pretend that MGM, when it was a very small operation in Marbella, may have been just Macklin, you know, doing something locally where he lived, and Daniel was helping out in the background. But I mean, what we started to see early in Ireland, because, well, the Republic of Ireland, the south of Ireland, it's been a bit of a graveyard for pro boxing over the years. I mean, you go back to the 90s when I think Lennox Lewis had to give out free tickets and Prince Nassim Hamed had to do an open session on one of the main streets in Dublin. And a lot of professional Irish fighters, I mean, it was kind of knocking on doors and selling tickets for their fights. So it was a grim existence. And then all of a sudden, when MTK come on board, suddenly OK boxers are on relatively lucrative contracts. They're living it up. Then the next wave, the bigger boxers, kind of Carl Frampton, I know, as an advisor, Michael Condon is there, as Kieran says, Tyson Fury is there. So it's gradually grown, and it doesn't make sense, the size of the staff they have, the money they can throw at fighters and have been. And then plus the fact, why are they headquartered in Dubai? Supposed CEO Sandra Vaughan lives in Scotland. The original company was in Marbella in Spain. Is it just complete fluke that they happened to open their headquarters down the road from Daniel Kinahan's penthouse where he's protected by ex-KGB guards?
Yeah. Kurt, there's something else that is worth considering is the impact on Irish boxing, because boxing is effectively Ireland's international sport in the sense that it's a sport Ireland have been good at on the international stage. Like, Ireland have won 27 Olympic medals. Of those, 14 have come in the ring. So that's over half Ireland's Olympic medals. At professional level, there's been more success at European and world level in boxing than in any other sport. You know yourself the history of professional boxing in the States, that largely for the first few decades of the sport, it was built on the back of Irish and Italian fighters. So there's a great Irish tradition there. But this has had a hugely negative impact. A toxic sport with many people. A lot of the media don't want to know, like sports editors, broadcasters, etc. A lot of potential sponsors and advertisers clearly don't want to know, because why would you want to be linked to something? You know, there's been a couple of other shootings around in boxing gyms in Ireland. You know, in a boxing gym in Ireland where one man was killed, and outside the boxing's national stadium as well. They might have no relation to Kinahan's, but they're all being linked together that boxing now has become toxic. And that's a great concern, because it's a sport that's done so much good in Ireland. Like, it's gone into, as it does in so many countries, as it goes into disadvantaged communities that the governments often ignore and other sports ignore. And it gets people on a level path, and it gives them, motivation and a cause and something that just keeps them away from a life of crime. But those same communities that were often, that owed a lot to boxing, have been destroyed by the Kinahans and people like the Kinahans. They've been destroyed by the drugs trade, you know. And that's a great sadness. And I don't know if boxing can come back from that. Like, there's been no professional show in Dublin since March of last year. Like, I don't think you're going to get any capital city in Europe with that gap. The year before, there was only 4 shows in Dublin. The year before, 8. So that graph has gone way down. And it's not just down to the Kinahan factor. You know, there's concerns about insurance and the government costs and the governing body looking for too much in terms of fees. But I think a huge part of it is the Kinahan factor, that venues don't want to know, the police force don't want them to go ahead.
And on a side note, actually, from that, Kieran, I mean, you talk, like, obviously at the Olympics, boxing is our thing and so many great fighters have come through. Those fighters are taxpayer funded, yet when they're going pro now, they tend to be going to MTK. So there's also the question of, do you want your tax money helping guys who are going to end up helping a cartel leader?
Right. That's a great point. Well, listen, let's, you know, for the people over here who, I mean, you guys obviously know chapter and verse of this whole saga. But let's go back to kind of what kind of tipped off the whole Kinahan-Hutch feud that has really kind of tore up Ireland. So, I mean, I'm only getting all this from you know, things I'm, you know, Irish, you know, media on the internet. But I guess it was in August 2014 when Gary Hutch, who was reportedly Kinahan's right-hand man, I guess, basically hired someone to try and burst into Kinahan's room or something where he was holding a summit and steal some suitcase of cash. That's what one of the stories had said. And supposedly the assassin was confronted or seen by Jamie Moore, former European junior middleweight champ, on the outside. And Moore ended up taking a couple of bullets for that. And Kinahan apparently recognized the gunman from security footage and immediately figured that it was Hutch who was behind it. And the story goes, I think this was from The Sun, that alleged that Gary Hutch admitted his role to Kinahan, agreed to hand over £200,000 in exchange for his life, but they demanded more money and eventually they allegedly executed him at an apartment complex in Spain. And I think the Spanish court later named Daniel as the man who ordered the killing of Gary Hutch, and that was also according to the Irish Sun. So I guess we'll go with you. And you know, before we get into the Regency, which was really kind of the pinnacle of this, but tell me about the Hutch family, and obviously they're not exactly choir boys either, but how this whole feud began.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not a crime writer, but I mean, my understanding
maybe Nicole the Talon or
no, I'm not. But I mean, from listening,
Mr.
to
Reynolds,
the,
like, I don't know.
Kieran might correct me if I'm wrong as well on this. I mean, the Hutches would have run a lot of drugs in Dublin in the 80s and 90s. Now small time compared to this, and they were actually also massively into boxing. Is it the Corinthians Boxing Club in Dublin would have been theirs? So it kind of became a turf war outside the Dublin city centre into places like Crumlin, and it became a power struggle. And it's got to the stage now where basically, I mean, from wiretaps and things, you'll hear people. I mean, the Kinahans could buy the Hutches at this stage, but within communities, I mean, it's in kind of working class areas of Dublin. You'll hear, like, you can't whisper certain names. People like neighbours will turn up. On it or this. I was in Crumlin Boxing Club for some stuff on Conor McGregor last year. And I mean, I was talking to the trainers there and they were kind of saying, come on outside and we'll whisper it, because you just cannot say these things out loud. You don't know who's affiliated with who. So it's grim like that. And I mean, it just became a tit for tat at the beginning. And Daniel Kinahan was regularly a target. I mean, August 2014, as you say, Jamie Moore gets shot by accident. That was a Hutch gunman in Spain trying to get him. November 2015, there was another attempt on Kinahan's life at, I think, a boxing weigh-in in the Red Cow, and one of his handlers threw a bin at someone and he got away with that. And then the one, I guess the Regency, as you mentioned, that's the one that really hurt Daniel Kinahan, because he's always had this idea of becoming a legitimate businessman, and boxing was his way to do that. And he was kind of making strides in that direction. The 5th of February 2016, it was a weigh-in for a European title bout between Jamie Kavanagh and Antonio João Bento. And the police messed up, we know that. Hutch gunmen entered. Some were dressed as a police special unit, one as a woman. And an associate of Kinahan's was killed at that in what was an attempt on Daniel's life. And the problem for him, it wasn't so much the killing or another attempt at his life. It was that the media were there. This was quite shocking to see in broad daylight in a hotel in the middle of Dublin, where the media are there, the police are there. This is supposed to be a sporting event. And all eyes suddenly went, wait a minute, what's this guy doing around boxing? And that destroyed his chance to go legitimate. Or at least it should have. I mean, what we're seeing now is another push for that.
Right.
But I think that infuriated him hugely. And since then, I mean, as we mentioned, I mean, there's 18 murders in that. 16 have been Kinahan's killing people on the Hutch side, and he's the guy calling the shots on that. So I guess the Regency, I mean, there may have been a flame all along, but I think the Regency was real fuel on that fire.
Yeah, because I think it's important to stress this, Kurt. Daniel Kinahan's obsessed with boxing. You know, he's genuinely very passionate about, and he wants to be a major player in the sport. And as Ewan says there, the Regency attack in February 2016, you know, that was a time when there weren't that many, you know, there weren't many questions being raised in the boxing, by boxing media or sports writers up till then. And you know, there was some stuff in the crime and by crime reporters, but that kind of that really knocked him back. Like that knocked his his plan to be a major force in boxing. And it's taken now, you know, 4 years for him to get up and running again. And then that this campaign that does look like a concerted campaign started in March to set himself up again. As getting back to the center of boxing, you know, it's interesting. Well, like the last murder in this feud was in May of last year. Like it's gone relatively quiet. So I think this is one of his priorities now. Like there's a lot of other stuff going on as well, because you know there was a trial that just ended yesterday here in court in Dublin with one of a Kinahan accomplice, but. There's definitely a huge focus on a huge part of his focus is in boxing, and it always was. But he was knocked off track for a few years, and he's trying to get back on track now.
There was one great line on that, Kieran. I mean, you'll have heard it. I remember being told this that boxing is to Daniel Kinahan as soccer was to Pablo Escobar.
that was the title of one of your articles, was it not, Ewan?
Well, it ended up the headline, but yeah, I mean, I remember talking to someone for that article, and that was their suggestion, because he does love boxing, and I mean, he may well actually be a very, very good manager. It's just he can't make the rest of this go away.
Yeah. Right. Well, can we make the assumption that if Daniel Kinahan were to surface in Ireland? And the Gardaí knew of his presence, that they would arrest him and charge him with ordering the executions of members of the Hutch gang who've been killed.
I think if he said, well, I'm sorry, you take it.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think tellingly that trial this week was a big deal, because just as Tony Hunt said at that, he said these killings are planned and executed in the context of feuds with other such organisations to protect their core activities, primarily organised drugs and firearm trafficking. And Detective Superintendent David Gallagher said in court, I mean, he named Kinahan as the head of that. So, I mean, it's quite timely to talk to you, Kurt, because these are the first time these things have kind of, they've been said privately to journalists, kind of there's been leaks around this sort of stuff. But for that to come out in court and for it to be said so openly, it makes me think, yeah, I mean, I think if he did step foot in Ireland now, I think he would. I don't know what you think, Kieran.
Well, I think if he sets foot, like as far as I'm aware, he hasn't set foot in Europe now for a couple of years. And I think, you know, it's not just the Irish police force that have been investigating him, Kurt. A lot of different police forces around Europe have been looking into him. So I don't think you're going to see, unless things change dramatically, I can't see him setting foot in Europe for a long, long time. I know. And then, you know, there is the question of why, you know, why hasn't he been extradited, or why hasn't there been an extradition warrant served in Dubai? And I don't have the answer to that. I honestly don't know why that has been the case today.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a huge question. That's a huge question. Now, it's interesting, even with the stigma of the Regency incident and you know, all of the, you know, horrible, you know, publicity and association with that, MGM signed, you know, and this was around, you know, the, you know, a couple months later, you have the 2016 Olympics, and they signed, what, Michael Conlon and Patty Barnes. Did they also sign, was it David Oliver Joyce as well? Was he out of 2016? I mean, it's a little surprising. Kieran, what was your reaction to that at the time when Conlon and Barnes and other members of the Olympic team signed with MGM coming out of the Olympics?
I would have been disappointed, that's being honest, because, you know, I would have known, particularly Michael Conlon, I would have known fairly well. I would have known Paddy quite well. And, you know, I had a lot of time for them. But I think boxing is a brutal business, as you know. Like, anyone who steps through the ranks, through the ropes in a professional fight is effectively putting their life on the line. So they're very focused on what they can get out of it.
Right.
Because they're not doing it for the good of their health, obviously. You know, right. Nobody wants their brains knocked around just for the fun of it. So I think a lot of people in that world, you know, just block out everything else as background noise, you know. And I don't know. I still think everybody's got a choice. And I think, you know, I think some of the guys that have gone to MTK, they definitely didn't have to. There's others now that wouldn't have had a huge amount of offers and would have thought, you know, what else am I going to do? I have to do something to look after my family. But there are definitely some there that you look at and you think, you know, you could have gone elsewhere. Why do you get involved with this guy?
I think that's a key point there. That's absolutely, especially with Michael, because, I mean, the likes of Paddy and stuff, look, at his age and where he was, I mean, he wasn't going to make it big, whereas Michael was always going to be a superstar. And he could have gone to anyone and been a millionaire out of this. So why did he do that? And I don't know. I suppose the gangster and the fighter are kind of drawn to each other as archetypes as well.
I was going to bring that up, Ewan. I think there is that free zone of danger, you know, that I think that appeals to a lot of people in boxing. Like Jimmy Cannon, you know, the great New York journalist, called boxing the red light district of sport.
Right.
And to many people, you know, many people thought that was actually praise, you know, rather than criticism. They like that, you know, that edginess to it. And I'm sure it's the same with you. And the amount of people say, oh, sure, Don King killed two people, or the mafia ran boxing for decades. That has nothing to do with what's happening in 2020. Just because something happened in the 1950s or the 1960s or even in the 30s or the 70s, doesn't defend what's happening now, when we're supposed to be, or we should be, a bit more on top of things like governance and sport.
Right, for sure. So let's kind of just following the timeline a little bit, as you mentioned kind of in the opening, Kieran, you know, MTK had a little legal dispute, MGM had a little legal dispute with the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas and rebranded, so to speak, and became MTK, which stands for Mac the Knife, which is Matthew Macklin's fighting nickname. You know, and in, I guess it's February of 2017. Daniel Kinahan was you know, allegedly bought out of his stake in MTK, you know, by Sandra Vaughn. And you mentioned her background, you know, former owner, or she had a big stake in Fake Bake Tanning Salons, and, you know, supposedly did very well. You know, she's insisted from day one that she purchased the business from Matthew Macklin in 2017. There was no relationship between Kinahan and MTK after the buyout. She said Kinahan may advise some of the individual fighters and recommended some to them, but he's not on the payroll. You know, I like what the Irish Sun, they called it a strange exercise in moral gymnastics, placing emphasis on the individual fighters who have him as an advisor, yet, you know, Sandra touting the benefits of collaborating with him to build their business. So Ewan, you know, are you buying the story that Daniel's just not involved at all? And I mean, I think you guys have addressed this a little bit, but you know, what was your take on the buyout?
I found it telling, Kurt, that she wouldn't do any interviews with actual media. She'd go through her own channels where she'd kind of come out with propaganda. And they had this fair news campaign, this kind of Trumpian slogan that seemingly we weren't being fair on her for raising legitimate questions around this. Because, again, I mean, you might like Fake Bake. She amassed $10 million to pay for that, but that was liquidated in 2013. Mm. You know, and as I mentioned, she says, look, now, so where did the money come from? Number one, she's never been able to answer that. Then she's been saying, look, we have nothing to do with Daniel Kinahan yet. As I mentioned, kind of the likes of Stephen Simmons and Declan Garrity and Jack Catterall, these people, these fighters in that stable, they kind of said all along, well, everything has to go through Daniel Kinahan. She couldn't answer that question. And now it seems kind of over the last few months, I don't know if this latest campaign has been because everybody's concerned with COVID and eyes are elsewhere. This kind of push for legitimacy seems to be them admitting, well, actually, we were right all along, that Daniel is involved in this and has been involved in this and always will be involved in this. So, no, I don't buy it. And I think if she was legitimate and she had bought this business and we were all wrong, I think she would have come out and given sincere answers that would have addressed our fears and worries. But she couldn't so much as sit down with the journalist, never mind answer a question.
Yeah, because a couple of weeks ago, Kurt, she did an in-house interview with the IFL TV, which, you know, was effectively in the pay of MTK at the moment. And in that, you know, she really played down what Bob Arum had said about Daniel Kinahan being the advisor. And she was saying, like, a lot of peak boxers and people within boxing have people who give them advice. It can be family members, etc. But then the following week, it was announced that KHK Sports in Bahrain, which now employs Daniel Kinahan, had come to come to some kind of partnership with MTK. And the last couple of weeks, they've released a couple of press releases about various things that are going on MTK have, with quotes from Daniel Kinahan of KHK Sports. So this is a guy, even a few weeks ago, they were saying, no, he's not really an advisor. He gives informal advice to some people. But now he seems to be back into the fold a bit more, and they're quoting him in press releases in his role as KHK Sport. And that this, it's actually beggars belief that a sports press release goes out with quotes from Daniel Kinahan. You know, it makes no sense to me. And I don't understand why more people aren't going after this story, particularly in lockdown when there isn't much happening. You know, this is a fascinating story.
And yeah. It's the people here as well he's dragging into it. That, I mean, we're talking about Daniel and 18 murders, and rightfully so. But, I mean, I don't know how aware people are of the likes of Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Zayed in Abu Dhabi. I mean, as I said, these guys are responsible for the starvation of 70,000 children a year in Yemen for the last 4 years. I mean, these are the people pushing boxing. I mean, it's quite disgraceful.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You talk about the lack of coverage, Kieran. I actually did pitch this story kind of around the time I interviewed Bob to some major outlets. I won't say which ones, but you know, it was pretty much ignored. You know, one major outlet got back to me. He said, "Oh, let's have lunch. Let's talk about it." And that lunch never happened. So, yeah, I think it's I guess it's unpleasant. And those who have a stake and an interest in the sport of boxing, you know, it's not the type of story they want to be trafficking in. You know, because it just reflects so poorly on the sport.
Yeah, and there's another thing as well, Kurt. About a couple of months ago, Daniel Kinahan employed the services of a UK law firm, you know, that are specialists in libel, that have a very good reputation for winning libel cases. And this is part of, I think, rebuilding his reputation, that already, you know, some newspapers have got letters around coverage of Daniel Kinahan in relation to boxing. So I think that's part of it as well. That threat and fear is there, particularly in the current media landscape. I think it's cowed a lot of the media to an extent, because this guy has a lot of money behind him. Like, you know, he could throw whatever he wants at you, whatever kind of lawyers, whatever kind of legal backup. So a lot of people are afraid to go after that because of that, I think.
Right.
But isn't
right.
it? Can I just say on that, Kurt? I mean, me and Kieran both talked to crime correspondents in Ireland. who genuinely risk life and limb so people are aware of what these guys are doing to their communities, what they're doing to individuals, what they could do to others, and what they must think to see the sports media do nothing as the likes of Daniel Kinahan is normalized as some sort of some sort of boxing guru. I mean, they must see us as absolute cowards.
Right. Absolutely. 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 Now, in I mentioned Bob Yalen in October of 2018. Bob was hired as president of MTK, and I have to say, I mean, listen, Bob has probably one of the best resumes in boxing, and I'm not sure that and I know Bob personally. I'm not sure anyone loves the sport any more than Bob. He's a former head of boxing at both ESPN and ABC. You know, I think he was chairman of the WBC ratings board. He's a noted historian and scholar in the sport. You know, that's where I got a little conflicted about MTK. I mean, because he, you know, admittedly, he's a great hire. He's a great boxing guy. You know, and in my my interview with him in April 2019. You know, he stated Daniel was not involved with MTK, but that very few people who have had fighters' best interests at heart, more of a best interest than Daniel. And MTK has made some other respected kind of boxing people. They've hired some other respected boxing people. So I guess my question to you is, you know, I mean, it's a tough one. It's like if Kinahan were genuinely no longer involved, MTK would actually be in great hands, would they not?
But I think you would still have, I still think you would have asked the question, you know, and you had mentioned it earlier, where did the money to build MTK come from?
Right.
So you could say, you know, you could say you can accept exactly what they've said and said, okay, there was a buyout in 2017, he's nothing to do with them. But what is it, what they bought was put in place by Daniel Kinahan and Matthew Macklin back in the day, and nobody has ever explained where that money came from, because a lot of money was spent on it. Like, they, you know, they have, you know, the facilities were ahead of a lot of other management companies, you know, and the boxers were treated better. Like, there was a financially, like, so, you know, I think you have to offer an explanation. If you're saying it's a legit business now, you still have to look at the origin story. And I think there's so many questions there that have never been answered. And when you have an MTK media ban that is lifted, but Sandra Bond still doesn't do interviews except in-house. At the end of a press release that is basically a transcript of her in-house interview, it says no further queries, you know, for the media will be facilitated. So you can't ask questions. And any organization that won't take questions, you have to wonder about it.
Right.
When
right.
I first, you mentioned Bob, Kurt. I mean, when I wrote those pieces you referred to, like the one in 2018, Bob had taken over as president, and I sent emails with legitimate questions again around all of this, and he refused to answer them, and then he did again an in-house interview. So I agree with you. I found that staggering for someone who purports to care and love about boxing as he does, because he's an intelligent enough man to do his due diligence before he gets into this sort of
He's role. A nuclear physicist.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, and there's no way he had all these positions in media without doing his due diligence. So he will have known what we knew. I mean, as mere sports hacks, we can find out this stuff in a heartbeat. So you say, I mean, does he love boxing? Maybe he did. But, I mean, was this a move where, for him, it's about how high boxing can reach as opposed to the shoulders that it's standing on?
Right. It's funny because, I had come across a couple of your articles, you and you had laid out a few questions that you wanted answered, and I did try to ask a couple of those questions to Bob specifically. Well, the one was like, you know, it was a really interesting thought of yours. You're just like, you know, like you said, you know, like we said, Bob has a great resume. He's a very smart guy. Like, you know, does it, you know, did it give him pause? You know, all of these, you know, incidents and you know, if you do any due diligence on this, you know, you see what's going on. These murders, you know, these horrific murders and you know, criminal activity. You know, did it give him? And he said no. You know, that Daniel, you know, just loves boxing so much and the way they treat the fighters. So I guess, you know, everyone has to make choices and Bob made his, but what's interesting is, you know, as we go along the timeline, so that's October 2018, February 2019, Tyson Fury, an MTK fighter, wants to come to Ireland to speak and see his fans. And at first he goes to Cork. They schedule something at an opera house. That gets moved to a university in Dublin that has to cancel the whole thing because there's graffiti and protests and so on. And yet, you know, a month later, MTK does a multi-year deal with ESPN in the United States where they're going to air 30 MTK events. So my question, I mean, obviously you guys can't answer this. I can't answer this. But, you know, what kind of due diligence did Disney and ESPN do, you know, before doing this deal with these guys?
I think they saw the money. I think they saw the dollar signs. And I think a lot of what they do involves the dollar signs and the money over morality. I mean, I don't think it's just this.
I think they just needed content, too. I mean, I think they gave like 30 dates because, you know, they have the new streaming service and they just needed content to fill time. So, you know,
I would imagine the Disney Corporation would walk across corpses if there was a check big enough at the other side of it and beyond the ESPN of boxing, genuinely.
Kieran, any thoughts on that?
I'm glad you're an attorney because you'll have to go through this for and remove half of what Ewan said.
It'll be unfiltered. We'll all freedom of the press.
Yeah.
But that kind of brings us. You know, I mean, obviously there are a million, you know, court cases and investigations going on all over Europe. That you know, we'd be here all day if I cataloged each one on a timeline. But as Kieran, as you addressed it at the start, I mean, there's been a concerted effort to kind of rehabilitate Daniel's reputation. You had the you know, in 2020, I think, you know, the rap song by called Major Plans by J Spades.
Yeah.
That alleged the Regency shooting wasn't gang warfare, but politically motivated. And then you had MTK fighters, Billy Joe Saunders, Sonny Edwards. They retweeted it, you know, and were supportive. It's followed by a video that you mentioned that was put up on YouTube by Scarcity City Studios. That was, you know, widely seen. So would you kind of make the assumption, Kieran, that this, you know, Daniel's kind of behind this, trying to rehabilitate his own image as he sees he's trying to make moves in the sport?
Well, somebody is, so you would suspect it might be he might have something to do with it. But it's quite interesting because a lot of journalists have approached Scarcity Studios, who produced this supposed documentary about what really happened in the Regency Hotel. And just a simple question, like, who asked them to do this and who paid for it? And there's been no answer. You know, they won't answer, and nobody will talk about it. And it's already been removed. It's been taken down of YouTube because it used copyright footage from independent newspapers here. So it just adds to the surreal nature of this story. You know, and it kind of reflects the times we're in, like when people, you know, you have anti-vaxxers and people going on about, you know, 9/11 truthers or people going on about 5G. People are in love with conspiracy theories. So there are a lot of people, like, you look at the amount of times that video, that rap video and the YouTube video, the amount of times they were shared before the YouTube video was taken down, a lot of people that buy that. And basically the conspiracy was that the media and the Gardaí, which is the police force here, had conspired to kill Daniel Kinahan in order for the Fine Gael party to win a general election. People actually believe that. Well, that's the world we live in.
We are in a post-truth world, Kieran. I mean, I find it quite something to be sitting here. You kind of turn off Donald Trump on the news in the middle of a pandemic, and next thing hear a rap song about a cartel leader to clear his name so he can become a better boxing manager. I mean, it was staggering.
That's crazy. So then...
I know we're not...
Go ahead.
Sorry, we're obviously laughing at this. You know, it is. You know, there's a humorous edge to it because it's just so bizarre. But it's a deeply depressing story, I think, for the sport ultimately. because it's a sport I've loved for a long time. Like, I have a family background in it, and I've become very soured by it, you know, because nobody, you know, 2 years ago, you know, Billy Walsh, you probably know over there, is the, yes, the coach of the Team USA, the amateur boxers. He's from Ireland, from Wexford, and he coached here for many years. And I interviewed Billy 2 years ago, and we covered a lot of stuff. And at the end, I thought I'd ask him about Daniel Kinnan and everything. And he really spoke really well and passionately about how the hell, as a sport, do we allow somebody like this to be involved in our sport when you look at all the good it's doing? And, you know, and what's really stood out is Billy is one of the only people in boxing to have spoken out. Like, in the wake of that, we approached a lot of other prominent figures in Irish boxing, and quite a few agreed privately with what Billy said, but wouldn't go public. I know that maybe that's the fear factor coming into play again. But I think people have to speak out within boxing and within the media now, because otherwise boxing's gone. If you let somebody like this be a main, one of your main power brokers, I think sport is in big, big trouble.
And do you know, Kieran, I mean, I don't know if you find an added tragedy to this, I suppose, relative to the actual tragedies that took place. Like, boxers were always, for people who, we interview people across sport, and it's very hard to get access, it's very hard to get honesty. And boxers always had that kind of earthiness about them and decency about them. And especially in places like Northern Ireland, where the likes of Carl Frampton grew up in a Protestant estate, Paddy Barnes grew up in a Catholic estate and ended up as his best man. I mean, Michael Conn, all these guys were in a sport that united places in Belfast, that united both Catholic and Protestant. It was the one sport that did it in a de facto war zone. And you want to be proud of these people because they're brilliant athletes. They've done an awful lot of good. But it's got to the stage now where just morally, you can't talk them up given the decisions they've made.
Yeah. That's rough. That's absolutely rough. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, Kurt, because I think everybody has to make their own decision. Like, I'm not going to judge any journalist who goes down a different route, because we all make decisions for different reasons. But I won't deal with an MTK boxer anymore. Like, I did in the past before the ban came into play. But since that ban, since I looked into it, I just think, you know, my newspaper still covers them, but I won't write about them.
Yeah,
I don't think should we boycott it, or should we go and ask the question? I suppose that's it's one or, for me, it's one or the other. Don't be caught in the middle where you do cover it, but don't ask the question.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, my biggest concern is, I mean, I'm not currently managing any fighters, but I managed fighters for over 20 years, and I also just love the sport to death, and it's. What really concerns me is kind of the coded language you're hearing, and even things that Aram and Yalen said. You know, Aram saying that he likes that Kinahan because he can put promoters in line who are having disputes. You know, he's a no-nonsense guy. And Yalen saying that, you know, Kinahan may have gone about things the wrong way with fighters in the past, but he's all about the fighters now. It just sounds a little too much like back in the old days, the third, you know, with Mr. Gray and Freddie, you know, Frankie Carbo, and the undue influence and muscle they had in the sport. And, you know, it's not even just Kinahan himself per se. I mean, I've heard rumors about promoters who are somewhat affiliated with him trying to get people to do their bidding by saying, you know who my friends are. So
Aaron has a story on that, and I've heard it as well. I mean, when I was writing these articles, I went to several promoters and managers in Ireland. And you kind of got silenced. Then some of them would only talk in encrypted lines. A couple of them said, look, if MTK and Daniel said, I want your stable of fighters tomorrow, I would do it for the sake of my family. And I mean, Kieran told me, you told me a story on the Black Eye, Kieran, the other week, if you want to share it as well along those lines.
Which one was that?
Was it a promoter, his kids? The kind of threat.
Sorry, somebody Well, he'd be a well-known figure in boxing, but he was was told his kids would be attacked if he had any involvement with MTK. So you are dealing with on both sides of the feud, you're dealing with dangerous people, you know. So I think that's why I keep coming back to what the damage of this has done to Irish boxing now. like in 2012 when Billy Walsh was the coach and they came back for the Olympics with, you know, Katie Taylor was Olympic champion, Michael Conlon, John Joe Nev and Paddy Barnes had got medals. Like, there's four boxers had won medals, you know, it was such a huge thing after the boxers had done well in Beijing as well. And they were national figures then, and boxing, you know, had a profile that it hadn't had in a long time. And it's just becoming an invisible sport now. It's gone onto the crime pages rather than sports pages to a large extent here.
Right, right. So I guess in closing, I mean, you know, and you touched on this a little earlier, Kieran, but, you know, what's the message to global boxing here? Like you said, you know, I mean, Irish boxing has been devastated by this. You know, there's the hotels, you know, get cold feet now, or you know, people won't insure it. What would you like to see major promoters like Top Rank or major distributors like Disney and ESPN who air, you know, who deal with MTK and air and feature MTK fighters do? I mean, should they pull back from MTK and not feature their fighters until MTK has completely disassociated themselves from Kinahan and renounced them? Or should they discontinue televising boxing as a whole if the major players are going to knowingly associate themselves with, like, international narco-terrorists, as the Kinahan organization has been called? I mean, you know, what's the play here for the sport of boxing? As you said, Kieran, there's, you know, and I've certainly argued on this podcast, you know, ad nauseum about, you know, how there's not structure to it and how there's not an overarching, you know, like an NFL, you know, NBA, like a commissioner's office to deal with unsavory sorts. So what's the play here for boxing?
No, I think that's key. That's absolutely key, that an international governing body that is, you know, squeaky clean, that everybody believes will be fair and will look at things in a proper and a rigorous manner, so that you could go to them with concerns about somebody like Daniel Kinahan being a key member of the sport. But you have to have a willingness within the sport for that to happen. Right. I don't see that willingness there at all. You know, I think too many people are just in boxing, are just in it for the bottom line, and Daniel Kinahan is good for their bottom line, so they don't care.
Hmm. Ewan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I guess, you see, for me, I would say at this point, boxing's name is mud. And that's in my head, looking at it from a moral perspective. I mean, I mentioned you're talking the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Daniel Kinahan, the Bahrainian royal family. I mean, you're talking really bad people. The reality is, though, will this make any difference? Because what we're seeing is Daniel Kinahan being legitimized by the likes of Bob Arum, Saudi Arabia being legitimized by the likes of Eddie Hearn, ESPN legitimizing MTK and almost rewarding them. If there's that Joshua Tyson Fury fight, purses are going to be through the roof. It'll be one of the most watched fights of all time. So, I mean, despite all it's doing wrong and despite crossing lines it should never even have gone near, it's being rewarded and doing very well. So I think that's the grim truth, and it's not just boxing. We're seeing that in a lot of areas. But despite showing no morality and despite mixing with such terrible people, because the money is so good and the numbers are so good, it'll be seen as a successful venture.
Right, right, right. Well, on that grim note, gentlemen, Kieran Cunningham and Ewan McKenna, really appreciate your time. This was a great conversation, and hopefully it'll be, you know, kind of educate people as to what exactly the hubbub is about. I mean, certainly you guys have been writing about this for a long time, as have, you know, Nicola and Paul Reynolds and so many people in the Irish press. But I really want to thank you for the time. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks.
All right, guys. And that will do it for another edition of the Boxing Esquire podcast, presented by The Ring and RingTV.com and distributed by the Leave It in the Ring Network. I'd like to thank Kieran Cunningham and Ewan McKenna for taking the time to speak with me. Just a really informative conversation. Really enjoyed it. If you like the podcast, please leave a comment or a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, or wherever you access the Boxing Esquire podcast. Really appreciate it, as it helps new listeners find the podcast. And also, do not forget to check out my companion piece to this podcast on ringtv.com that will also feature quotes and background on the interview with Kieran and Ewan. And until next time, so long, everybody.
Did you get what you was looking for?